this is a question about policy decisions that have set precedents with the for the implementation of the convention. Do you see any policies, or what policy decisions would you identify that have had a real impact on how the World Heritage Convention has been implemented over time?
Well, I think the development of the strategy for a global and balanced, credible World Heritage List has been a major policy, change in terms of really broadening the kinds of heritage that were being was considered suitable for inscription on the World Heritage List. I mean, I think it started out, as you well know, as a very kind of European-focused convention focused on the traditional kinds of heritage we associate with Europe, the cathedrals, the Roman monuments, and I think this quest to be more balanced and representative really expanded a lot of people's thinking about what really is universally significant, and now we have this much broader range of types of sites, including ones that have perhaps stronger intangible things than the physical monuments. And some people might say it's gone too far, but I think that probably would be the single largest policy thing that I could think of that's made a big impact.
Are you thinking of specific sites that would illustrate that kind of more intangible, or the broadening out because of the global strategy?
Yeah, the one in Mauritius, the Aprovasi Ghat. To me, that was because when you looked at the images of it, there's nothing very monumental about it. It looks rather undistinguished, I guess, for lack of a better word. But when you heard the story about what it was and what it represented, that added a whole other dimension. So yeah, I would say that's one. There's also the where the maroons were kept in. Is that also in Mauritius?
It's Mauritius.
Yeah,
Le Morne,
right? Where again, I think it's basically just caves there where they sheltered. So that's to me is a good example of that kind of. I think, and if you had proposed that kind of a site in the late 70s, early 80s. People would have said, no, that's not what this convention is about. And then that relates to this question you asked me before about will we ever say that we have enough World Heritage sites? How can we if we're constantly evolving in our thinking about heritage?
There have been decisions on specific sites, either not so much on nomination as on conservation, I would say, that have really influenced the way the convention has been interpreted and applied subsequently. Do any of those pop into your mind?
Well, what I want to talk about is the removal of the two sites from the World Heritage List. I think the Oman case, during the meeting in New Zealand in 2007, I believe that's where it was. The committee was so reluctant to actually remove this site, even though the Omani government, that's what they wanted. They basically said, we'd rather have oil development than a World Heritage site. We've reduced it to the size of a postage stamp. And I remember David Shepherd up at the podium saying, it doesn't have outstanding universal value. And yet even with all of that, the committee really struggled with, they felt, this was terrible that it, they were going to be removing a site from the World Heritage List. And a couple of years later, the Dresden situation, which had been building over the committee sessions, the committee kept saying to the German government, if you allow this bridge to go forward, we're going to have to remove the site. And the U.S. position was that, the committee had been making these threats essentially, and they had to follow through. When the bridge was going forward, was being built, if this was going to mean anything for the convention, that we had to do this. We had to remove the site from the World Heritage List. So I think it was good for the convention to actually say, outstanding universal value is really is something, and if you mess with it, you know, you've got consequences. There are consequences to pay for that.